Chapter 9. Lex snapped awake from his sprawl on the couch. He'd dozed off, waiting for Corbin to arrive, and he'd clearly woken up just in time. A glance at his wristwatch told him he'd managed to snag an hour of sleep, which was possibly the longest stretch of time he'd managed in the past few days. At the door, being allowed in by Mercy, was John Corbin, a man with a seemingly average face that topped a tall body with a muscular, heavy-set build. He was dressed casually, in jeans and a work shirt, with messily folded sleeves. Lex was operating on maybe 3 hours of sleep in all in the past 72 hours. He was not at his best. But he had to work fast. They had a limited window of time during which the enemy would be completely unaware of him. They would not imagine that he would be able to put together an effective assault team in under 3 hours. Before he'd dozed off, he'd managed to complete a few of the preparations. The crate that they'd be transporting Dr. Psycho in was ready. Lex had few illusions about trying to get the miniature misogynist to work for him willingly and in an effective manner, so Lex had to improvise. Lex had managed to harness the Joker's psychosis into something useful before, but frankly, it just wasn't worth the effort putting up with the crazy people. He considered his own irrationalities and chuckled at the irony. The midget had actually saved him some time and trouble. It was easier improvising him into something useful, rather than having to build something from scratch or pulling something from the discard pile. He glanced over at it, noting idly that the crate was now closed, rather than open, which was how he'd left it. He shrugged. Mercy or Lawton must have done it. Waller had seemed as though she was tentatively convinced, and had sent Lex a few documents that had given him some more useful background on his target. Truth be told, most of the information would have been available to him through the Freedom of Information Act, but even expedited, the request for documents would have taken weeks. Waller had simply decided to cut through the bureaucratic overhead and had one of her tame geeks email him the files. He'd speed-read through them just before he'd fallen asleep. His nap had given him enough time to absorb what the file had laid out for him. Project Mindful, later renamed Project M, was the group that had operated the chemical studies out of Bannerman Chemicals. Project M's main thrust appeared to be the development of newer types of soldiers, enhancements to the existing troops, advanced cybernetics for the time, and bionic augmentation. The beginnings of bio-warfare, and the earliest experiments enforcing metagene manifestation. Project M was responsible for creating nearly a dozen metahuman agents operating in and during the war, including the first Robot Man, Miss America, the GI Robot, and the Creature Commandos. It was fascinating reading in and of itself, considering the massive leap forward in the technologies Project M introduced. They went from barely understanding how genetic inheritance worked to surgical procedures that allowed living snakes to be implanted into a woman's scalp. It was mad, heartless, and terrifying. The kind of attitude that would turn a corpse into a weapon. The kind of mind that would conceive of using psychoactive drugs to cripple generations worth of geniuses. At the end of the war, Project M was broken up into a dozen smaller agencies. Biological containment techniques and protocols developed during the war formed the core of what would eventually become the Center for Disease Control. The cybernetics and engineering divisions not only broke free, but ended up as a privately owned company, evolving into Science and Technology Advanced Research Laboratories, Star Labs. The biological division, with specialties in genetic engineering, chemical augmentation, and cloning, emerged as Project Cadmus. Project Cadmus, which controlled the lion's den that he was about to walk into. Lex noticed that Lawton, who had obviously now realized that they were going into some potential danger, had stopped raiding Lex's limited stash of beer and was now drinking a cup of coffee. The coffee machine was steaming, and a full pot was ready. He could recognize Mercy's handiwork, and thanked his lucky stars that the woman was as efficient as ever. Lex swung himself off the couch and stumbled to pour himself a cup. He nodded to the new arrival. "John," Lex said in a friendly tone. "Good to see you again." There was something oddly stiff about the man's movements. His facial expressions weren't quite right either. His face was too still, missing the twitches and flinches one would expect from most men. The voice was flat, non-inflected, but possessed of a tinge of malice. "Luthor, what do you want?" Lex laughed as he set his cup back down. "After all this time, and that's all you have to say to me?" "Almost every other time you call me up, you try to rip my heart out. Forgive me if I seem a little distant," Corbin responded. Floyd pulled a face, then sidled closer to Mercy. He asked in an elaborately loud whisper, "Did they used to date?" Mercy eyed Lawton as though he'd grown a second head.
"I think Lex would have a bit more taste."
So what was that about his heart?" the greasy man asked, waggling his eyebrows elaborately and inclining his head to the two men who were making low-voiced small talk, or at least some sort of negotiation. Lawton wasn't really paying attention. "'Cause that sounded seriously gay to me." He noted the expression on Mercy's face and held up his hands defensively. "Not that there's anything wrong with that. Some of my best friends are... well, okay, they're not gay, but they're kinda..." Mercy rolled her eyes and saved Floyd the opportunity to push his foot down his throat any deeper.
"That's Metallo, you idiot. The guy with the kryptonite heart. Heard of him?"
Floyd frowned for a moment before he recognized the name. He snapped his fingers. "Oh, sorry, I thought he looked more, I don't know, robot-y. Oh, so when he said Lex ripped his..."
"He was being literal," Mercy nodded. "Now shut up, I think Lex just talked the guy into working for him. Again,"
she smirked. Lex, meanwhile, had led Corbin over to his workbench. The taller man sat down on one of the stools and bent down, allowing Lex to peel back some of the skin at the back of his neck.
"You're sure about this?"
"Look, these people specialize in cloning technology and brain transplants. If anyone has the know-how and the technical skills to get you back into a real, living body, it's them."
Lex spoke offhandedly.
"So how come you never mentioned them before?"
The flat voice had suspicion in it now.
"Last time you were too useful the way you are. Now I don't care if you get moved into a human body," he replied before stabbing a USB cable from his computer into the open port at the base of Metallo's skull. "What I'm uploading into your internal hard drive is a suite of programs for breaking into their internal networks. I needed something with a bit more memory and speed than what I had on hand, and I didn't feel like building a new portable computer from scratch."
"I keep telling you, Lex, you could have bought something from that electronics store the next block over," Mercy called over, showing that she had been eavesdropping the whole time, like a good bodyguard.
Lex called back to her over his shoulder.
"Like I'm going to trust something off the shelf for something this important?"
Corbin spoke up, ignoring Mercy and addressing Lex.
"So you're using me to break into their systems?"
"Precisely. I'll mostly need to get into their network and bypass security and make sure all the doors are open and the alarms are off. But since we'll be in there anyway, you could go ahead and pull whatever information you can on their cloning tech and brain transplantation procedures. Your metal head will also ensure that the data stays safe. Other than that, you and Floyd will mostly be making a lot of flash and noise to distract people from my approach."
"I can do noisy no problem, Lex."
Flattened pride colored the synthesized voice. He mimicked crackling his knuckles. But instead of the expected noises, there was only the whine of servos and the sound of metal being slowly tortured. Lex peeled away a bit more at the edge of the hairline where the false skin was joined only loosely.
"I also have a couple of upgrades to your internal antennas. This way, you can get on their wireless network and I'll be able to trigger and run the programs I have from my phone. Once I'm done, you'll be able to pick up Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, 802.11b...
"Can I get ESPN?" Corbin asked in his flat voice.
There was amusement in it now, or at least the simulation of amusement. Lex stared at him for a moment, then shrugged.
"You know what? Sure, why not? Do you want the movie channels, too?"
"Seriously?"
"Even the porn channels, it's just a couple minutes more to adjust it." Lawton sidled over and nodded to Corbin. "Hey, can you hook me up with that too, boss?" Lex gave him a flat smile. "I could, but you're not equipped for it."
"Trust me, man," Corbin said to Lawton. "It ain't worth it."
Lex continued to apply various tools and fiddly metal bits to the back of the man's head. He spoke in a distracted tone.
"He's right, you know."
"How bad could it be?"
Lawton asked in a drawl. "I have not had sexual relations with a woman in the manner of a man in more years than I care to count," Corbin said flatly. Well, in an even more flat tone than his normal.
Floyd stared at him.
"Damn. Okay, ESPN can't possibly be worth that."
"It's why I'm hoping this whole thing pans out," Corbin replied.
"So you're Metallo, right?" Lawton said, looking the man in the eye.
This close, the falseness of the man's skin was obvious, some kind of latex rubber. The complete lack of extraneous movement was creeping him out even further. Even the faked, overly even breathing. Floyd still stuck his hand out to the sitting, well, the guy was still a man, complete lack of sexual relations aside. It didn't hurt to at least try to be polite to the guy who was watching your back.
"Yes, you look sort of familiar," Corbin replied, taking the man's hand and shaking it in a painfully firm grip.
"Floyd Lawton, also known as Deadshot."
Corbin was about to nod acknowledgement when Lex smacked him hard on the back of the head.
"Hold still, you dolt. Last thing you want is me driving one of these things into your cerebellum and frying what few working brain cells you still have," he snapped.
"Sorry."
Lex sneered. "You will be sorry if you move your head again. Hold still."
Corbin asked with a flat, hopeless tone,
"Can I get picture in picture?"
"You'll get a lobotomy if you don't let me work."
Floyd flashed a smile once more, then sidled away, back to his previous station at the kitchen counter near Mercy.
"I know you told me, doll, but they still look kinda gay to me," he muttered to her.
Mercy cooed at him.
"Are you jealous, Floyd?"
He narrowed his eyes and glared at her. "You remind me way too much of my ex-wife."
The two men manhandled a wooden crate out of the back of a white van with a Lexpress shipping logo painted onto the side. The guard standing in front of the warehouse doors watched them. It had been a slow day. A delivery was some measure of interest against the backdrop of a dreary and overly warm day. The guard, a young fair-haired man with an athletic build and a ruggedly outdoorsy tan, pulled at his sweat-sticky collar and put away the textbook he'd been reading. Night classes at the community college for CSI would pay off when the time came. He walked overly leisurely towards the two men wheeling the dolly forward. He had a name tag that identified him as Whalen. The men bringing the crate forward were arguing in a sort of good-natured way. Both were wearing Lexpress uniforms, which consisted of work boots, gray slacks, a yellow and gray work shirt, and oversized gray ball caps. The guy in front, a wiry, raw-boned man in his 30s, with black hair and a painfully appropriate pencil-thin mustache. Whalen supposed the guy probably shaved that thing to a millimeter's precision. Mustache guy was also wearing a pair of big, old-fashioned sunglasses. The other man was taller and built like a linebacker. He was obviously doing the bulk of the work in moving the crate. What could be seen of his hair was short and grayish-brown. The guard had no idea why, but there was something weird about the guy. It wasn't anything Whalen could put his finger on, but there was just something about the man that was giving him the creeps, something awful. Mustache guy waved Whalen over, holding out a clipboard. It was one of those little details that you noticed. It was a clipboard. Real paper on a wooden board with a metal clip, rather than those ruggedized PDA things the regular Lexpress delivery guy used. Funny, that. Whalen put a hand on the butt of the gun he had holstered at his hip.
"Can I help you, gentlemen?"
Mustache guy noted the movement, and his eyebrows rose up above the top of his sunglasses.
"Hey, we're just dropping off a delivery, buddy."
He held his hands up, showing the other was empty. The bigger guy rolled his eyes, but again, there was something off about the movement. The guard couldn't figure out why those two looked so wrong, but they just did.
"Where's the regular delivery guy?" Whalen asked.
"You expect us to know?"
Mustache guy asked with a laugh.
"Hey, we just get paid to deliver this crap. We don't know where anyone else is. You don't want this thing, you just sign."
He waggled the clipboard held above his head.
"And we tell dispatch you refuse delivery. You get to explain to,
he glanced down at the shipping label taped to the outside of the wooden crate.
"Director Paul Westfield, why he didn't get his crap, all right?"
"Director?" Whalen started to ask, but the man with the mustache interrupted him.
"Look, just sign the damn thing and we'll take it back with us. You don't have to shoot, all right?"
Mustache gave him a big, friendly grin, a harmless, friendly grin, and Whalen relaxed just a little. He held a hand out to the two men, making a huge production of moving it away from the pistol. The big guy still hadn't moved much, but Mustache Guy looked like he calmed down some, lowering his hands and the clipboard.
"Look, I'm sorry about that," Whalen said to the man, apologetically. "I'll sign for it. You can leave it here. This place makes you kind of paranoid, you know? All these secretive brainy types running around complaining about keeping things secured."
The mustache man nodded and moved to pass the clipboard over to the guard.
Yeah, I totally get you, man. You just gotta be careful. I understand."
The man fumbled, and the clipboard fell to the floor between the men with a clatter. Whalen gave a friendly smile and bent down to pick it up when he realized that his back felt much lighter. At the base of his neck, he could feel a cold circle of steel touch his skin lightly. The man with the mustache spoke. His voice had dropped from friendly to icy cold.
"You know how your instincts were telling you it was a bad idea to get too close?"
Whalen gulped and nodded nervously. He tried to turn, but only got the vaguest glimpse of the man's face from below. The sunglasses were tucked into his breast pocket. Those eyes were dead and cold. That mustache didn't look quite so ridiculous anymore.
"The ones that told you to put your hands on your gun?"
the man continued quietly.
"Those instincts? You should have listened."
The larger man made a sound that was like a sigh, then asked,
"Which way to the freight elevators?"
"That way," the young guard replied, pointing to the closed double doors at the far end of the warehouse. "It's at the end of a hallway, past those doors." Finding his courage, he continued, "You'll never get through. The hall's armed with a grid of laser alarms. The only way to shut it off is either from the main guard room or by entering a code at the keypad next to the elevator. There's no way you can get to it before every guard we've got swarms you guys." The larger man did something truly horrible. He smiled. Not like a normal person would smile. There wasn't any of the movements you'd expect from normal human muscles. It was simply a reveal of his teeth. No wonder primates treated the baring of teeth as a threat. This was threat, in its distilled form. The lips pulled back into a terrible grimace, revealing huge, perfectly white teeth. Perfect, even teeth. The mustached man sneered.
"You let us worry about that."
He nodded to the larger man, who tapped the crate with a negligent finger, making a loud knocking noise. Whalen could almost swear that he saw the larger man's eyes flash red for a moment, then green. Just a tiny pinpoint of light behind the irises. It reminded him far too much of the Terminator movies. As if the young guard had not already been having a sufficiently horrible day, something even worse happened to him. He thought that the gun to the back of his head was the worst thing that could happen. The larger man's horrific smile, a moment later, managed to top that. What happened in the next moment surpassed those both by leaps and bounds. He didn't even notice it at first. He could feel his heart speed up. Slowly. Steadily. His heart was racing. His breath was coming in short, strangled gasps as though he was trapped. Far worse than simply being held by these two men. He felt as though he were being compressed, unable to move, bound, and frozen to the same spot. His heart was threatening to burst out of his chest now. He pulled in air in shallow gasps, unable to fill his lungs. He needed to break free. Nothing was holding him. Even the mustached man had moved away, as though he'd stopped being a threat. Waylon turned. Or at least he tried to. All that happened was that he'd fallen over, every muscle locked in place, paralyzed by some helpless, nameless dread. These men weren't it. They were simply men. There was something nearby, stalking him, pressing close, slithering its way around his limbs, his limp, unresisting, unresponsive limbs. Something was touching them, gliding, feather-light touches of something leathery and dry, scraping across his raw nerves. He tried to pull in air more desperately, unable to take in more than a tiny slip at a time. A small and distant part of himself that still remembered his first aid training realized that he was beginning to hyperventilate. This tiny part of his mind tried desperately to let him know that there wasn't anything to be afraid of. But whatever was happening had him in its grasp. His heart was going to explode. He knew it. He just knew it. He could feel cold bands tightening around his chest, squeezing him, as those whisper-like touches all over by unseen and terrifying hands left him on a ragged edge. From the wooden box came a scream, loud and long, drawn out and torn from a throat scraped raw. After a moment, Waylon realized the box wasn't the only thing screaming. He was screaming right along with it. He screamed back, unable to stop himself, emptying his tortured lungs of the air he would need in a few minutes. His heart continued to pound, and his vision was beginning to gray out around the edges, and little dancing motes of light were invading his field of vision. He saw it raise up from the floor, an amorphous, living shadow taking form before him. Its figure had feminine curves, generous and deliciously womanly, but in dead, flat black. It had no face, merely a blank expanse that looked as though where the mouth and eyes should have been were sewn shut. It had massive demonic wings that swept out from its back but closed around him, enfolding him in an embrace that threatened to crush the very life from him if he resisted. It loomed, drawing him close. The sewn-shut mouth was beginning to unravel. It opened, revealing a terrible maw of teeth and horrific pink tentacles swirling out to draw him into it, a tiny morsel for it to snack on and be amused by for a moment before he would be spat out and ignored once more. But the whole while, the terror, the screams, the oxygen deprivation continued on and on and on. Floyd watched dispassionately as the guard first experienced what looked like an anxiety attack, then screamed, then fainted. If Luthor was right, everyone in the facility was going through what this guy was. The only reason he and Metallo weren't incapacitated was because Lexi had rigged up their hats with something to block telepathic attacks. The something in question looked suspiciously like tinfoil, but if it was good enough to block CIA mind-controlling satellites, it should be good enough to protect them from misogynistic telepathic midgets. Even with that protection, though, he was feeling it. Faint tuggings at his mind and his thoughts. Something scary flickering away at the edges of his senses. Something dark, faceless, feminine, and squirmy. It disturbed him that the guard started tenting his trousers even as he was in a dead faint. He quickly glanced around the warehouse, confirmed that he and Metallo were the only ones still awake, and the double doors to the hall that led to the rest of the places were wide open. The security in this place stank something awful. Lex hopped out of the van's driver's seat, straightening out the frighteningly expensive suit he had on. It was a purple so deep that it looked black under most lights. His shirt beneath was white, and his tie was a sort of lavender-violet delaté that by all rights should have looked completely girly, but the ex-pres managed to pull it off somehow. Floyd figured that when people had money to burn, they could afford to look as ridiculous as they wanted and still look presentable. "Any trouble?" he asked as he strode up to them. "Not a one, boss," Floyd replied, shucking the Lexpress uniform off to reveal his uniform underneath. He drew the back of his arm carefully across his brow, making certain not to dislodge the hat or his sunglasses. His costume was a special material. It breathed while still providing adequate insulation. In other words, it kept you cool when the weather was hot. It wasn't really meant to be worn under a heavy jumpsuit. He noticed that Metallo didn't even bother taking off the uniform. Then again, he probably wasn't feeling too hot. It's not like he could even sweat if he wanted to. On the other hand, it wasn't like the guy actually had a costume, exactly. The closest thing he had to a distinctive look only happened after people tore through the latex rubber skin he had, and he started looking like the Terminator on steroids. Floyd glanced over at Lex again, in his suit, a faint sheen of sweat gleaming off the man's bare scalp, and he asked, "Just curious, if me and Metallo need to wear the hats to protect ourselves, how come you ain't got one on?" "Technically, I don't need to wear mine. Lex already had the defense circuitry installed in my head," Metallo noted. "I've got my own psychic defenses," Lex said casually as he moved to the double doors. "Although Dr. Psycho's choice of mental terror is rather unusual." "Well, the guy's got all sorts of issues with women, doesn't he? Can't see this being so weird," Floyd replied. Metallo made a sound that might have been a laugh, or it might not have. "Sorta. What kind of sicko makes his fear thing a big demonic woman?" Lawton slapped his knee and laughed. "He's projecting. Waller." Lex allowed a smile to flick across his face at the byplay. "I suppose it makes sense. Large, scary, sexy black demon woman who'll eat you up and spit you out." "Sexy, Lex?" Floyd smirked, glancing over his shoulder at Lex. "Do not tell me you have a thing for Waller." "I do not have a thing for Waller," Lex responded stiffly. Floyd held his finger up and said brightly, "She did say you stuck your tongue in her mouth when you were still Prez." Metallo's expression, flat as it was, seemed to take on the aspect of shock. "You Frenched Waller? Seriously? You really are an evil mastermind." Despite the flat tone, there was a sort of grudging admiration to his voice. "What are you two, 12? Lex ground out. "We're in the middle of an infiltration. Can we please focus?" Floyd laughed. "Sorry, sorry. Who you do is your thing, boss. I just never figured you for a chubby chaser." Metallo gave Floyd a light slap on his shoulder. "You're okay in my book, man." He then gave a horrible braying metallic noise that passed for his laughter. Lex glared at both of them as they reached the double doors. Floyd continued to smirk and snigger, while Metallo had managed to smooth his face back into easy impassivity. "Seriously, though, boss," Floyd said once they'd passed the threshold and stood at the beginning of a stark white corridor. "I'd still feel better if you were to stay in the van while me and Metallo did this." The larger man nodded. "Mercy threatened to turn Floyd into a woman if anything happened to you. We're still not sure how you talked her into staying." "I'm very persuasive," Lex said, flashing a grin. "Mercy, for all her zealous overprotectiveness, is a reasonable woman and can be dealt with rationally." Floyd snorted slightly, then turned to Metallo. "What'd she threaten you with?" he asked. "Something about a screwdriver lobotomy," Metallo replied blandly. "In any case, we'd both feel safer for our own sakes and yours if you stayed out of this bit." "I'm perfectly capable of taking care of myself, gentlemen," Lex replied with a smirk. "You're here to buy me time and make sure this entire place goes down."
"Oh, come on, Lex," Floyd interjected. "You know what we mean. I mean, it'd be one thing if you were wearing that battle suit Delatai used to have."
"I remember that thing," Metallo said slowly. "You could go toe-to-toe with Supes in that thing." That thing, as you so eloquently put it, was a merger of Kryptonian, Apocalypton, and B-13 technologies. It was as safe and predictable to drive as a Pinto. The best part was the fact that the telepathic control circuitry on it
was acting up and liable to fry my brains every time I put it on. Lex tapped his temple with a finger. I need to keep my greatest weapon keen, gentlemen. Besides, he gestured down at his sartorial splendor. I'm already wearing the power suit I need. He glanced up at the other end of the 80-foot-long corridor where the keypad was. Across the corridor, at various heights and angles, were a multitude of moving security beams that were mostly only visible when dust passed through them. Lex gave a small, approving nod, and passed a sheet of paper from his pocket bearing several numbers to Floyd.
Here's the code Waller gave.
You sure this'll work? Floyd asked.
Lex shrugged.
If it doesn't, you can always use real bullets. Just be a good man and key it in, would you?
Floyd shrugged and fished a small air gun from the pouch on his lower back. He eyed the combination once more, then took aim. He shot each button of the combination in sequence, avoiding the web of sensors each time. He ended it by shooting the open button.
Easy peasy, Floyd smirked,
twirling the faux gun around one finger before dropping it back into its pouch. Lex nodded.
Impressive, I'll admit. When I heard about that little security measure, I was originally going to hire the Catwoman to slink her way past the beams and let us through. Unfortunately, she wasn't going to be available until next Thursday.
Floyd chuckled.
A slinky Catwoman caper with her dancing around security beams? I'd have paid you to take me with, just to watch that. I've seen her move in that little cat suit of hers.
They walked down the now-empty corridor, reaching the other end. Lex pried the panel loose using a small pocket knife and then began pulling and splicing wires into Metallo's wrist. Metallo lamented flatly.
It almost makes me feel that the video recording and playback capabilities I have are wasted.
Lex patted him on the shoulder and said, not unkindly, completing the connections between Metallo and the security panel,
"Well, if it all goes well, you should be able to get a human body for yourself soon enough."
Floyd nodded cheerfully.
"Yeah, so don't you worry too much, big guy."
Lex began fiddling with a PVA, and Floyd could see the lights in the back of Metallo's eyes were flicking red and green, as whatever it was Lex was doing triggered various things.
"First thing I want is a steak. Something huge and rare and greasy. Then I'm going to wash it down with a six-pack of Bud," Metallo continued idly. "Then I'm going to find some blonde twins and see if I can convince them to have a little..."
"I'm in," Lex said, interrupting whatever fantasy Metallo was about to launch into.
"I've opened all the doors between here and Westfield's office. You two are going to be busy making a diversion. I've left the downloader running in your head, Corbin. You'll be pulling data off their network and broadcasting it back to my computers for analysis. Floyd, you know where the charges need to go."
He smiled at the two, then glanced back into the blank expanse of wall, whereupon he nodded and waved. The assault on Project Cadmus had begun.